Welcome to the back pages from the Hartford Courant and the Journal Enquirer. I'm Rick Gray. I'll start with an article from Taylor 6 of Lexington Herald Leader. It's entitled, Homes for Good Boys and Girls. Dateline Lexington, Kentucky. When Laura Helvey met Catherine Gabbard in her yard in the summer of 2023, she was sitting on the ground next to her dog, Bossy, crying. Gabbard was about to disregard her court orders to go to addiction treatment for one reason. She couldn't leave Bossy behind. Gabbard was packed and ready to run into the woods with Bossy, just so she could stay by her side. Bossy, a hound pit bull mix, was also pregnant and the only source of constant affection and support Gabbard had for the past couple of years, some of the worst times of her life. She helps me if I am sad, Gabbard said. She feels what I'm feeling. Helvey, a stranger to Bossy and Gabbard, consoled the pair and ended up bonding with the dog. Helvey made the decision to foster Bossy so Gabbard would feel at ease to leave for treatment. A few days later, she was fostering 7 dogs, Bossy and her 6 newborn puppies. They were nicknamed the Recovery Pups and named after recovery facilities in Kentucky, Hope, Isaiah, Ethan, Spiro, and Ark. One puppy, Spark, did not survive. Helvey, who lost her son Daniel to an opioid overdose in 2019, operates Spark Ministries of Madison County, a nonprofit community center that points people with substance use disorder towards rehabilitation programs, detox programs, support groups, churches, and job opportunities. At its core, Helvey's office helps remove barriers for people seeking recovery. It wasn't until another woman came into the Spark office building with her dog every day, resisting treatment because her dog had no place to go, that Helvey recognized another barrier. The group Fostering for Recovery, founded by Crystal Morris, was quickly created, and calls began coming in weekly from people asking for Helvey and Morris to take in their dogs so they could go to treatment. Through all her struggles, that dog was with Gabbard, Helvey said. That dog was with her when she lost her family, when she lost relationships, when she lost her home. The dog was with her. Bossy loved her unconditionally, no matter if they were living in a park or in a tent. Gabbard wasn't allowed to visit with Bossy for a while, but Helvey sent her pictures that Gabbard printed out and placed on the walls in her room. When the two were reunited, Gabbard said, Bossy knew I was better. Gabbard successfully completed her treatment program and has been reunited with her family and Bossy. She is one of 9 people the program has helped get into recovery by fostering their pets. When we started advertising it, it really took off, Helvey said. We get several calls a week. In another instance, Helvey and Morris met a man who was about to be released from prison after 18 years. While in prison, he was partnered with a shelter dog to train the animal and receive work experience and emotional support. The man was accepted into a trade school with the stipulation he complete an inpatient treatment program prior to his release. While going through treatment, he needed someone to watch his dog until they could reunite again. A foster took in the dog, which was later reunited with the man who successfully completed his program. Finding fosters is the hardest thing, Helvey said. There are requirements that Helvey and Morris look for before allowing them to foster. There is only one treatment center in eastern Kentucky which will take an emotional support animal when accepting clients, Helvey said. We have had to turn people down because we don't have fosters. That is our biggest need, she said. It is really sad. When the dogs are taken in, they are taken to the vet for spay and neuter operations to establish responsible pet ownership once the pets are returned after their foster homes. Both fosters and clients sign contracts about their participation and expectations for being a part of the program. Another hard part of working with the dogs and their owners is the heartbreak that comes with how these cases can be resolved and the stress of finding people to care for animals, sometimes permanently, on very short notice. The woman who inspired the program, the one who continually showed up to the office with her dog, eventually got into treatment. The group thought she would be reunited with her dog, Remy, after her 3-month inpatient treatment program was completed, where the woman thrived. However, when the woman appeared in court for an old charge, hoping the judge would acknowledge her accomplishments, she was unexpectedly sentenced to 8 years in prison on the spot, leaving Remy with nowhere to go. On a video call that night, Remy's owner said goodbye, pleading that the dog never forget her or their times together. Remy now lives with Helvy. Helvy is no stranger to keeping the dogs herself. She currently houses 3 in addition to her own 2 Rottweilers. Helvy has had as many as 10 dogs in her home at once. "It is a really big need," she said. "The rescue community is just overwhelmed." While she was in treatment, Gabbard said she heard stories from other women at the facilities who had not been as fortunate as her and lost their pets. One woman's dog was killed, and another never learned what happened to her pet after it was placed in a pound. "No words can explain the gratitude I have for Helvy," Gabbard said. "It was a blessing. What she did, and a lot of people wouldn't do that, especially with the stuff she already does." The next story was written by Joe and Teresa Graydon of King Features Syndicate. It's the People's Pharmacy, Prescriptions and Home Remedies, and it's a Q&A column. Tech advances in diabetes care refine blood sugar task. The question, as a mother of 2 type 1 diabetics who are now both in their 40s, I've been watching technology and equipment become much easier to use. My daughter was diagnosed in 1983 at age 4. We used a clunky AccuCheck machine and pricked her fingers and toes multiple times a day. Today, she can just put her phone to her CGM arm patch and get an instant reading. She has no signs of diabetic complications and has had 3 healthy pregnancies. Insulin pumps used to have tubing that often clogged. Today, pumps connect directly to the monitor patch to deliver the right amount of insulin. And the response, "Thank you for reminding us how challenging it was to monitor blood sugar levels. Today, continuous glucose monitors, or CGMs, are about the size of a quarter and are both easy to use and accurate. A typical CGM stays on the arm for 2 weeks and can transmit data to a smartphone or insulin pump. This makes it possible for people with diabetes to track how food and activity affect their blood glucose. This summer, the over-the-counter Dexcom Stelo Glucose Biosensor System will become available for people with type 2 diabetes who do not use insulin. People without diabetes will also be able to use this technology to track their own blood sugar." The next letter, "I have had a big problem with chiggers in my yard. They seem to love pine straw, and I use it to mulch my trees and garden. A pharmacist suggested sulfur, which I used successfully for years. Tucking my pants into my socks and dusting my sneakers and socks with sulfur powder works. I also wonder if it will keep away ticks." And the answer, the U.S. Forest Service suggests that sulfur powder can indeed repel ticks. This old-fashioned remedy has sometimes been called flowers of sulfur. People tell us that they put the powder in a sock and use that to dust their shoes, socks, and pant legs. Sulfur can be found online or in garden stores. You may also want to consider treating shoes, socks, or pants with permethrin. This insect repellent is also helpful in keeping ticks away. The next letter, "I checked your website for reliable toenail fungus treatments. Unfortunately, I found only the depressing news that the over-the-counter medications are worthless. You had a sobering warning against soaking feet in a bleach solution, too. I tried my own treatment successfully, though. I'd had a whitish growth on my big toenails for several years. Since I couldn't wash it off or scrape it off, I mostly ignored it. I don't know if it was fungal or bacterial. When the left toenail started crumbling, I decided to do something about it. I started scrubbing my toenails in the shower with a small, stiff brush. A toothbrush would do. And Hibiscians, an over-the-counter antibacterial soap. I also mixed the solution of one part bleach to two parts water and applied it to the toenails using a cotton swab, twice a day letting it dry in place. Within about a week, the whitish deposit was gone. I kept up with the HibiCleanse for another week, noting that the damage on the left big toenail seemed to have stopped. I kept up the bleach treatment until the left big toenail was almost grown out. All my toenails look great now. The remedy was easy, safe, and cheap. And the answer, thanks for sharing your experience. The quick response suggests that your nails might have had a bacterial infection. Fungus usually takes a long time to eradicate. We especially appreciate your careful application of a diluted bleach solution. Bleach, aka sodium hypochlorite, is one of the most controversial nail fungus remedies we have encountered. Readers have pointed out that dermatologists sometimes recommend Dakin solution, which contains dilute bleach and a buffer. We have heard from other readers who have burned their skin with bleach that had not been diluted enough. Using cotton swabs to apply the solution just to the affected nail was a smart move. And now let's segue over to read the advice column by Amy Dickinson. Ask Amy. In-law wants man to keep secret from wife. The first letter, Dear Amy, I grew up in the same town as Carly, the woman I later married. Her older sister Susan and I were in the same class in high school. Susan and I were friendly in high school, but I wouldn't say we were exactly friends. After college, I returned to my hometown when my father got sick and needed help in his business. I met Carly, and we fell in love. Carly and I have a great marriage with two young children. We are all close with Susan. Recently, Susan pulled me aside and said she wanted to talk to me alone. She told me that she has had feelings for me ever since high school. She said she knew she could never act on those feelings, but she wanted to be honest about it, and that's why she told me. I was completely stunned. She urged me not to tell my wife about this, and I agreed. Now I'm not feeling good about that. I don't feel comfortable with the whole situation, and I'm not sure what to do. Signed, Stuck Husband. And the response, Dear Stuck, if you want to stay in a primary and loving relationship with your wife, then you need to tell her about this episode. Her sister has violated some basic boundaries, but the one you should be most concerned about is her insistence that you keep this a secret from your wife. Intimacy involves telling the truth and being brave enough to be honest about a situation that might wound the relationship between your wife and her sister. Holding this bombshell as a secret creates a bond with Susan and distance from your wife. Tell your wife what happened. Tell her that Susan asked you to keep this from her and that you agreed, but you feel extremely uncomfortable doing so. The entire clan can recover from this and move on, but this depends on the temperaments of your principal parties. Your honesty about this will kickstart some awkwardness, but you should refuse to be party to any subsequent drama. Move through this with transparency and with your wife by your side. The next letter, Dear Amy, we live on a street with on-street parking in front of the houses, as well as private driveways. We have lived here for more than 10 years and basically park peacefully wherever we want to, including using the available on-street parking. We all do that. We just got new neighbors who want to claim the two spaces in front of their house. They have posted notices on Facebook and Nextdoor, including photos of our cars. This is really nervy, in my opinion, and I'm not sure how to react. I don't want to be a bad neighbor. Signed, Unsure Neighbor. And the response, Dear Unsure, your neighbors are the ones who should worry about being a bad neighbor. They are entitled, and perhaps you should let them know how you feel about these directives by parking wherever you want to park, as long as it is legal and allowable. The next letter, Dear Amy, I wanted to address the question about polyamory from Confuse. When it is done right, polyamorous relationships can be very healthy and loving. They require trust, communication, and compromise, which all healthy relationships need. Yes, polyamorous relationships can end badly, but so can monogamous ones. Monogamy is not some kind of armor against cheating or separation. The best position from which to dip your toe into a polyamory is one where your relationship is already strong and solid. Couples run into issues when they open a relationship as a way to fix underlying issues, or when one partner feels coerced into it. This writer describes their relationship as happy, and the couple sound like they're both interested in polyamory. The best advice I've heard on polyamory is to do your research, set boundaries that both partners are comfortable with and feel good about, and check in with each other frequently. Signed, Don't Judge. And the response, Dear Don't Judge, thank you. As I said in my response, if you don't have children at home and can mutually agree to parameters that will allow you to explore your sexual and relationship curiosity with other people while still staying emotionally committed to each other, you might take the leap. Well, so much for present advice. Let's look to the future by reading horoscopes by tarot.com. We'll start with Aries, March 21st to April 19th. Noticing shifts in your social life could be informative. Have you seen more or less of certain friends lately? You'll naturally resonate with people who share your values, so any changing patterns might suggest there's a deeper process going on within you. Taurus, April 20th to May 20th. A straightforward path to progress is presently unlikely. Acknowledging that doesn't mean you've failed. It means you've already learned something valuable. Whatever you eventually decide to do, embrace the benefits of being an expert on your own experience. Gemini, May 21st to June 20th. Changes to your belief system could seem inconvenient. You might be more aware of what you're losing than what you stand to gain. This shift hasn't necessarily come out of nowhere, but maybe key pieces are starting to fit together. Don't feel obligated to rush a decision. Cancer, June 21st to July 22nd. You may currently be dealing with deeper concerns. Perhaps you're not as alone as you feel. Someone could be just the right person to help, and it's probably not who you'd expect. You'll only find out if you take a risk. Weigh the discomfort of exposure against the potential benefits today. Leo, July 23rd to August 22nd. Asserting yourself has the potential to disrupt the relationship. Maybe you've just become aware of an ongoing pattern you used to take for granted. Speaking up could cause drama in the moment. Still, your leadership can make things more comfortable for everyone involved. Virgo, August 23rd to September 22nd. Pride comes before the fall, especially when it comes to important topics like health. What you're learning right now can help you in the long run, even if questioning your assumptions hurts at first. Focus on what works rather than maintaining loyalty to a particular belief system. Libra, September 23rd to October 22nd. A creative project might push you to dig deep. Even if you're fascinated with the direction your curiosity is leading you in, perhaps you're also getting anxious because you'd hope to have a final product ready. Try to make a point of enjoying the journey instead of deadlines. Scorpio, October 23rd to November 21st. Resolving a home or a family matter may take longer than you think it should at this time. Finding the answer is not necessarily all on you, and that's a good thing. Give someone else the chance to surprise you with their insight. Keep an open mind to the valuable opinions around you today. Sagittarius, November 22nd to December 21st. You may be called upon to deliver on a commitment you made, even if you didn't think much of it at the time. Keeping the promise could be rewarding. Maybe you'll learn some useful skills as a result of your efforts. Adventure is everywhere, so take a chance. Capricorn, December 22nd to January 19th. Purging your possessions could bring clarity. You may be motivated by a desire to clean up your space. Even so, deciding what to keep and what to toss would require some significant decisions. Admitting you're over an old hobby will free you to pursue something better. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th. Getting your needs met could presently feel like a high priority. Demanding more from others in your life will probably have risks, though. You may need to do something you're drawn to all by yourself, even if no one else comes along. Find comfort in the unknown. And finally, Pisces, February 19th to March 20th. Finding a fresh perspective on a troubling incident is possible. Your developing insights might edge into difficult territory that some aren't equipped to deal with. On the other hand, an appreciative audience could provide the validation you seek. Read the room carefully before you spill your guts. And now we'll switch over to the Journal Enquirer to read the commentary column by Joe Pisani. Did I say that? The truth is out there, but who can find it? What do you plan to do with your life? Whether you're 20, 50, or 90, have you asked yourself that question lately? I still don't know. I got to thinking about the meaning of life after one of my students gave an impassioned speech describing the stress that 20-somethings feel when everyone is pressuring them about their future. For me, the 20s are light years in the past. Right about the time the Beatles split up and I was buying bell-bottoms at the Gap, which I still occasionally wear to weddings, wakes, and funerals. A good pair of jeans lasts forever. Listening to this young woman's speech also reminded me of the pressure I put on my four daughters to become millionaires. It's the least you can do for the old man, I told them. I've been supporting you ever since you left the maternity ward and even before you were born. Those Lamaze classes cost mucho dinero, and we didn't use them because your mother decided she didn't want to pant-pant-blow once the contractions began. When you fork over thousands of dollars to raise your kids, is it wrong to expect a return on your investment? I guess that's a question for the New York Times ethicist. My student's speech was met with resounding acclamation from her classmates, who chanted, "You go, girl, and do what makes you happy." At 20, my preferred approach was do nothing, which didn't go over well with my father. So I ran off to Paris in pursuit of true love, but that's another story. Whenever I asked my daughters, "What do you want to do with your life?" the usual response was, "I don't know." Or, "I haven't figured that out. I'm too busy enjoying myself." I suffered the same indecision during the Vietnam era, when Lyndon Johnson was making decisions for us, and his decision was the draft. So I set out in search of truth. Have you ever done that? It can get you into trouble, which Socrates discovered when it was too late. As they say in the X-Files, the truth is out there, but who can find it? My family rationalized my eccentricities by telling our relatives he's trying to find himself. I wasn't alone. An entire generation was trying to find itself, and I'm not sure we were all that successful. Millennials and Zoomers think they invented the phrase, but we did. Of course, finding yourself is a luxury reserved for people who have the time and money, which our parents didn't have. The greatest generation needed to support their families during the Great Depression, and they had to fight the Nazis when democracy was really being threatened. Baby boomers, on the other hand, joined the Beatles on the Magical Mystery Tour with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, guru to the stars. In the search for meaning, some turned to drugs. Today, they're capitalists who own pot dispensaries. Others turned to activism. They're politicians in their 80s who refuse to retire. While others turned to hedonism, they're all in therapy. I immersed myself in books about free will and determinism so I could discuss metaphysical questions at the Sunday dinner table while my relatives were arguing more pressing matters like, will the Yankees take the pennant? When there was a lull in the chaos, I'd raise my voice and ask, are we truly free? Or is freedom an illusion? A painful silence descended upon the dinner table. My mother, who graduated from St. Augustine School in Bridgeport before going to work at Kresge, never had the luxury of a Jesuit education, but she had the solution to my adolescent angst. He needs a good bop in the... She was referring to my derriere. My father, who was equally practical but considerably less patient, had a better solution. He sent me to work with my cousin Larry, the bricklayer. Every Italian family has a bricklayer or two. This rowdy band of hard-working, smoking, drinking, swearing masons always enjoyed talking to me on the scaffold about whether the unexamined life is worth living. They weren't Jesuit-educated, but I think they knew more. During that period of development, I acquired a few habits that took a while to kick. Notably, smoking, drinking, and swearing. Now I'm coming down to the home stretch, after a lifetime of ups and downs, joys and sorrows, successes and failures, good meals and bad meals, loves and betrayals, and I'm still wondering, what's it all about? I know it's not about making millions, and it's about much more than your job, whether you're the CEO of Amazon or serving chocolate chip pancakes at IHOP. St. Francis de Sales, who in his 20s defied his father's orders to go into politics, once said, "Have patience with all things, but first with yourself. Never confuse your mistakes with your value as a human being. You are a perfectly valuable, creative, worthwhile person simply because you exist. And no amount of triumphs or tribulations can ever change that." Those are words worth remembering. You have value simply because you exist, not because of your resume, your politics, your education, or your bank account. And that's true whether you're 20, 50, or 90. My students were right. That's the way it went on the back pages. I'm Rick Gray. So long until next time.